We are up to verse 13 of Philippians chapter 1, and as the words say, it says, "So that it has become evident to the whole palace guard and to the rest that my chains are in Christ." And remember that Paul is writing as he is in chains, as some have speculated that Timothy was likely taking the words of Paul while he was under arrest and being guarded to write to the Philippian church, as well as other churches. And then he also, we understand through Scripture, was often the person that actually delivered those letters to him too. I think one of the things, and this is a favorite song of mine, it doesn't seem like it's as popular down here as it used to be back around Northridge where I grew up, going to church there, but we actually had a song from Galatians 2:20, and we would just sing the verses of that song faster and faster until we couldn't sing it anymore. And I still think about that when I go to this passage. It is a good way to remember the passage, but it's more important to remember the passage for what it says and less about the fun way to sing it. And it says, Galatians 2:20 from the New King James, it says, "I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me." Why did I put that on there? Well, just jump back up to verse 13 and see what I've underlined. "It is evident to the whole palace guard and to all the rest that my chains are in Christ." I think this passage in Galatians 2:20, at least I felt, helped explain what Paul was going through. The idea, we don't know all the details of what he's telling us here, but it seems very clear in this verse, as well as in other places that Paul writes, that the entirety of his stay in prison seemed to affect the people around him significantly. And we see that with Peter and John. I think we're going to talk about them as this lesson, this segment of a lesson wraps up. We also see others in the New Testament that were supposed to be teaching for Christ that were also arrested or at least put in positions with authority around them, and they recognized their unique characteristics of being servants of Christ. In verse 14 it says, "And most of the brethren in the Lord, having become confident by my chains, are much more bold to speak the word without fear." So why is Paul writing that, these things? We'll continue on in verse 15 and 16. "Some indeed preach Christ even from envy and strife, and some also from goodwill. The former preach Christ from selfish ambitions, not sincerely, supposing to add afflictions to my chains." So as we can see here, a little picture of what some people are doing just to try to cause hardship for Paul is basically preaching what they say is the word of Christ or from the gospel and doing it in such a way that seems to bring damage to Paul. Other people are doing it for the right reasons, and these two combined here. We'll go on to verse 17. "But the latter out of love, knowing that I am appointed for the defense of the gospel." And we talked about this earlier, Acts chapter 9:15 says, "But the Lord said to him," when we were discussing earlier about when Paul was selected and disciple was saying, "Lord, I don't want to have anything to do with this guy. He's a problem, and he's trying to put people in prison, and he's killing people." And he said, "For he is a chosen vessel of mine to bear my name before Gentiles, kings, and the children of Israel." So Gentiles, kings, and the children of Israel here. We see that Paul was. Philippians chapter 1, verse 18, "What then? Only that we, or that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached, and in this I rejoice, yes, will rejoice." So again, this idea that Paul's talking about, even if we jump back up to the previous page, looking about the people are confident about Paul because, yeah, he's in chains, but he's willing to go to prison because of this gospel. It's that important to him. And people knew who Paul was. People knew about his background. Remember when he went before the elders of the church, in, I believe in Jerusalem, and he was given a defense why he was doing the things that he was. And he said, "Because I was of all Jews a Jew. I was everything that every Jew that wanted to be the best Israelite that they could be was being. I was fully geared to be a teacher, to be," I believe he said he was, if I'm not mistaken, a Pharisee. Or he was basically trying to be a leader of the Jews in that way. And yet he was still completely changed by Christ. And we see about him there in Acts chapter 9:15. So then why he says these things is every way in prison and truth Christ is preached. He's just happy that people have become emboldened to do that in such a way. One of the things I thought about here, and I have to ask for your using some care and how you understand this, Because like I said, as we go back here, this previous page, some indeed preach Christ from envy and strife, some from goodwill, the former preach Christ from selfish ambitions, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my chain, but the latter out of love. The way that Paul says that almost gives you the idea that regardless of what their motivation is, as long as Christ is being preached, that's what's important. And I think that is what is being conveyed here, but don't take that out of context, please, because that's Paul's not saying we can do anything that we want to with the Word of God, but it's just the background of some of these people. And the reason I put Mark chapter 9 on there, verses 38 through 41, was to kind of go along with that thought. And this was when Jesus was approached by John, and John said, Teacher, we saw someone who does not follow us casting out demons in your name. And remember, the disciples were sent out to do works for a certain amount of time, and they came back. And I believe this was the situation that they were talking to Christ. And we forbade him because he does not follow us, meaning he's not part of their group following Jesus. But Jesus said, do not forbid him, for no one who works a miracle in my name can soon afterwards speak evil of me. For he who is not against us is on our side. For whoever gives you a cup of water to drink in my name, because you belong to Christ, assuredly I say to you, he will by no means lose his reward. Again, you have to be careful how you read some of this text on here. It's not saying you can do anything that you want to, but remember, as Christ is trying to point out there, the miracle would not have happened if it wasn't part of the plan, if he wasn't doing the right things, even if he wasn't part of their inner group or whatever that means there. So just trying to lump a couple thoughts there together as what kind of relating to what Paul is talking to this Philippian church about. Verse 19, for I know that this will turn out for my deliverance through your prayers and through the supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ. Colossians 1:13 says, he has delivered us from the power of darkness and conveyed us into the kingdom of his Son, of his love. Talking about God and Christ there, we've referenced this passage, I think, a few times in our Resisting Satan study that we've had on Sunday morning. Matthew 21:22 says, and whatever things you ask in prayer believing, you will receive. So why am I putting these two things on here? Well, Paul said in verse 19, for I know that this will turn out for my deliverance through your prayer and the supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ. So the idea of what is being delivered is through the Son and his love and whatever things that you are asking in prayer. Note the thing that I've underlined there from verse 19 says this stuff is happening because or through your prayers. So you see that relationship between this Philippian church being caring about Paul, asking God that he would get out of this situation, and Paul recognizing these things. And also Romans chapter 8, verse 13 through 15 kind of goes along with this as well. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For as many are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God, or the daughters of God, as you could say. For you do not receive the spirit of bondage, again to fear, but you receive the spirit of adoption, by whom we cry out, Abba, Father. So this idea, going back up to verse 19, all three of these passages, I felt, help explain some of the dynamics involved in why Paul is being supported, why it's important for prayer, and how important it is to be in line with the Spirit of Jesus Christ. Verse 20 says, according to my earnest expectations and my hope, that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but with all boldness, as always, so now also Christ will be magnified in my body, whether by life or by death. A very powerful statement. I don't think we pay attention too often to the significance of what Paul's saying. He's saying, I have a mission, I'm going to accomplish it at all costs. It's going to happen, and I am going to be bold about it. Remember just a few verses earlier, people were being drawn to preach the gospel, to be part of the church, because they saw this man who had lived his life in such a way, was turned upside down, and he was absolutely dedicated, even to the point of being imprisoned by Rome, because of the gospel. So they had this person, this leader to follow as an example, and certainly Christ was Paul's leader as well. Psalms 25:2 says, O my God, I trust in you. Let me not be ashamed. Let not my enemies triumph over me. We talked about Galatians 2:20 earlier, a song that we've taken from that. Now, you would likely think of another song that we sing with these verses, the words from verse 2 of chapter 25 of Psalms. So it's just underscoring the fact that Paul is not ashamed of what is being He is teaching no matter the situation. And Psalms 25:2, the psalmist was saying, let me be the same way as Paul's trying to be. Let me not be afraid of my enemies. Let me just assume that everything's going to turn out. Acts 4:29 says, now Lord, look on their threats and grant you to your servants that with all boldness they may speak your word. That would be such a great thing. And this is applying to us too. As I've read everything from Philippians chapter 1, that was to the Philippian church. But just as all the letters of Paul were to be circulated among the churches then, they're still circulated with us today. And as we want to have the encouragement from those things. Down to verses 21 and 22 of Philippians 1. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I live on in the flesh, this will mean the fruit from my labor. Yet what I shall choose, I cannot tell. You know, one of the things I like about this verse, or these verses here, is Paul knows what his mission is. He knows what he's armed with. He has the boldness. He's not afraid. But he even acknowledges, at least as I understand it, he doesn't know what's going to become of the things ahead. He only knows that if he can finish the course that he's on, as he's talked about in other passages, if he can complete that race that he's running, he will receive the reward he's after. But he does not know what the future holds with regard to things that he may face. Similarly, in John 15, 1 and 2, says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. Why is this in there? Going back up to verse 21 and 22. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor. Paul is talking about to the Philippians that I am doing exactly what Christ wanted me to do, what the words of John 15:2 says. I have been given energy. I have my roots down. I am drawing in the minerals and the things that supply the plant with the ability to produce fruit, and it's happening. I'm making myself useful. But note the penalty for that. If he fails, every branch that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And we know from other verses too that they are actually gathered up and burned. So there's a penalty for that. In verses 23 and 24 from Philippians 1, for I am hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart to be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. You talk about a loving statement here, and this is a great way, I think, as he gets close to wrapping up this Philippian first chapter as we've divided it up. He wants to be with Christ so bad. He wants to get away from this world. He wants to have the bliss that's promised to those that are followers of God and followers of Christ, to have that reward of just all happiness, all reward. But he also said, I don't want to leave quite yet because I want you guys to be fully equipped. That should be what's inside of us. We want to get away from this place and all of its hardships and all of its difficulties and be with Christ. But at the same time, we should have our lives dedicated in such a way to take more people with us. One of the lessons I thought about doing, and I still have on my to-do list, is that idea of saving people. I always thought of, if somebody falls out of a boat and you throw a rope to them, them holding onto the rope is not saving them. Saving them is when you're making sure that you're keeping your balance in the boat and you're actually pulling them out of the waters into the boat. That whole process, until they're saved, is saving those people, and they are not out of harm until they're actually where the boat is, or maybe in cases where the boat is out of the water and on dry land. And so there is a lot of work involved, and we have to think about that because we have been saved and we need to save others. Colossians 3:1-3 says, if then you are raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on things on the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Yet again, we talked about this passage with our Resisting Satan classes that we've been in. But this applies to verse 23 and 24 of Philippians 1. I'm hard-pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. So both of those things are accomplished by the Colossian letter in chapter 3. Sorry for my remote delay. Verses 25 through 26, and being confident in this, I know that I shall remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy of faith, that your rejoicing for me may be more abundant in Jesus Christ by my coming to you again. So again, Paul looking forward to trying to be with him. In verse first part of verse 27, only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel. Such an important thing. Our conduct, interestingly, both the same spelling, and we'll get to that when I have a couple passages to put up here. Conduct and conduct, the same word is used. How do I conduct myself, and how is my conduct defined? Both about the reactions to things that hit me, and each of you as well. Only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. What he's saying here is exactly what God and Christ are saying. I don't care where you are, what you're dealing with, whether you are in church or whether you're out of church, whether you're in business, be conducting yourselves the same way. Be living a life of a Christian. Be thoughtful about the people that you're around and the example that you're setting. And Paul's saying the same thing here. You guys are doing a great job, but make sure your conduct is the same whether you see me coming or whether I'm not there. Don't just do it to please me, like some of those verses we talked about earlier about sincerity. 1 Peter 1:17 through 19. And if you call on the Father, who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear. Interesting that he put that there. What time of your stay is he talking about? Is Peter saying the time that you stay here in the church where I'm at? No, he's talking about your time of your stay here on this earth. Just reminding us that our lives, our souls are eternal. Throughout the time of your stay here in fear, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold. Remember what Philippi was founded upon? From your aimless conduct received by the traditions of your father. But what were they founded on? But with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. Again, that perfection we talked about earlier. The second part of chapter 27, so that whether I come and see you or absent, that I may hear of your affairs. We've read that. I've underlined some different things here. We talk about perdition and salvation here. Perdition, the definition that I pulled off the internet, says a state of eternal punishment and damnation into which a sinful or unpenitent person passes after death. So when we read that up there, and do not in any way terrified by your adversaries, which is to them a proof of perdition. So we're trying to not show that example, but to show salvation that is from God. 29 through 30, for to you it has been granted on behalf of Christ not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his sake, having the same conflict which you saw in me and now hear in me. Acts chapter 9:16 relates to that, for I will show him how many things he must suffer for my name's sake. You know, Paul knew from the very beginning that he was going to be dealing with hardship. Perhaps part of his thorn in the flesh, as he often talked about it, was because of the person that he was before he knew Christ. He was a persecutor. He was a person that saw to the death of other people. And Christ revealed in Acts chapter 9:16, he's been selected. I am choosing him, but he's going to suffer some things. And you might think, well, Paul is going to be, his penalty for what he did wrong was to be really chastened in life. He was beaten, and we read about all the bad things that happened to him, the shipwrecks and so on. But another thing that we see here, remember in this suffering, what he's talking to these Philippians about, my suffering is giving you courage to stand strong, not to think that everything's going to be easy and you can overcome it. 1 Peter 4, verses 15 and 16, but let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or as a busybody in other people's matters. Yet, if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, and let him glorify God in this matter. These things sometimes are hard to hear as a Christian. You want everything to be roses when you talk about Christianity. You want everything to be easy for the rest of your life. But I think one of the best things that our study on resisting Satan has been for me is remember, and I've said this almost every lesson I get up and do for myself and for you, is that every time that you're doing the right thing, there's an X on you. Somebody has a laser aimed at you to try to take you down. And if you're doing the right thing, things are going to be hard. It's hard to feel that way. We mostly feel the difficulty of hardship, but we should be taking confidence in knowing that if we're struggling and we're doing the right thing, we've got to be like Paul and just let other people know that that's the most important thing to us. Continuing on, for the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God, and it begins with us first. What will be the end of those who do not obey the gospel of God? Certainly a valid question. And that's going to be the question that I leave this with. I got a few other pictures here, but just for us to think about. What will be the end of those who do not obey the gospel of God? There's two types of obedience. We've always talked about this. There's the obedience of becoming a Christian, recognizing your sin, and becoming a Christian. But there's also another part of that too. When people are actually Christians and they don't make it to where they need to go because of failures there. So again, this question is valid to a non-Christian and a Christian as well. So I used some pictures here. It took me a little while to go through Google Earth to find Philippi because it's not listed as Philippi. They've got different names on here. I can try to pull my notes together. I didn't have them all here for you. But you can probably see from the picture there. Remember I was showing you the basilica and the arena that was there. You can see both of those in 3D space from Google. It's interesting that you don't hear about, and you think about these mountains throughout the course of the Bible, Old Testament to New Testament, big things always happen around mountains. And here is another place, a city situated at the base of the mountains. Certainly the Greeks and the Romans and other people of the time recognized mountains as power. They even saw that as the earth, not so much with God. But you can see some of these things that we looked at the first lesson located there. But we're going to do what we did to the traveling across the plain to see where Joseph started off and where he ended up, just for some perspective. All the book of Philippians was written to a church somewhere located in that area that you can see there most likely. And we back away from there. There's the city disappearing below us in Google Earth, looking smaller and smaller. People, places, you're starting to see some of the sea there. And just keep on backing away until finally, and it's really too dark there, but that's the entire earth right there. I did a lesson a long time ago about just what the universe was, how powerful it was that it was created, and how small we are in it. And I wanted to do that same idea here because Paul spent a lot of his time writing to churches in that little tiny dot that you can't even see right there. And that's the same as what they're doing for us today. And Christ, God, are both fully intent that we try to have every hope of salvation that we can have to be with them forever in eternity. And right down on that sphere, on the other side of it, really, is where we're at today. We are just as important as that church was at Philippi. We are just as important as every people that have ever been and ever will be. But each one of us is responsible for our actions. And so as we close the lesson today, I want to point up these points here. Some main points from 1st and 2nd. Like many of the cities that Paul wrote to, Philippi was an important, and so was the church. The city was yet another important roadway for Rome, helping the gospel spread. The letter to the Philippians shows the teamwork of Paul and Timothy, and certainly as do other letters. What the church was doing there seemed to make Paul very happy and encouraged. Paul's situation seemed to add resolve to the church at Philippi, and the church's strength increased with Paul's own. Oops, sorry. While the churches also had so much of the right stuff, as I put in quotes there, Paul prayed for them to have more. One of the verses we looked at did that. He said, you're doing a great job, but just do more of it. And point eight, Paul reminds them that his challenges were helpful in strengthening others. No matter the situation, Paul celebrated the preaching of Christ. Paul was unashamed and bold to face all opposition for Christ. The church is exhorted to show the right conduct and to stand with one mind. And finally, just as with Christ, suffering is to be expected in this world, but overcome. Why? Why do we have to deal with it? Because the rewards are enormous and eternal. They will never stop. So that's the lesson today. Not a very long chapter, but it's just packed with good things to think about. I pray today that you haven't been here for entertainment. I pray myself sometimes that I'm here for that same reason. We think about other churches getting together and having bands playing and music and drums and all that stuff. And we sometimes condemn them in our minds. But then we come here almost to be entertained for the same reason. I want this lesson to go by so I can get back to my day. Are we paying attention to what we're reading about? Am I paying attention to what's being taught? And we should always ask ourselves that question. So like the Philippian church, Paul is hopeful that we will be edified and encouraged to do more for Christ and the gospel, especially in spreading it. And this morning I just encourage all of you to either take advantage of that or to work that into your lives as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.